This week's episode contains frank discussions about violence, mutilation, torture, pain, and suicide. So listener discretion is strongly advised for this week's episode.
Hello again, Anna.
Help! Somebody!
They can't hear. Not that it would matter. They're all aware of you being here.
What they said about calling the police was true. I did.
I know. It was your abbreviated 911 call that alerted us. That and your little excursion downstairs to see Sam. All outgoing calls come through our system. Without yours, we would have assumed that the doctor's work with Sam was proceeding as planned. So, I owe you my gratitude. Without you, we would never have gotten our dear Lucy back.
I didn't give her to you.
Of course you did.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop. And with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
I have nothing funny to say this week. After these movies, there's nothing funny in me.
We're going to try to throw some jokes in here to lighten this up, because it's going to be a heavy one, folks. Trish Coughlin?
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. There you are. And yeah. Jeff Omega?
So Sam, do you have nothing funny to say? Took a lot out of you, because the first one makes you question a lot of stuff, makes you go to some dark places, and the second one just isn't that great, and you're just depressed that it wasn't better.
I was texting Jay as I was watching and explaining my feelings without talking about it too much, but yes, I went from frustrated to angry by the third act. It was, yeah. So, yeah, there's a little bit of anger there.
I think mine came a little later, because, yeah, Sam, I was about, I don't know, half. Sam was about halfway through when I was starting. And yeah, I think by the time I hit the third act, I said, fuck this movie.
Yes. That was my. I will say right now that if I didn't have to finish watching the remake of this one, I probably would have turned it off. Not because it's a bad movie. It's just bad in comparison to the original.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's not a great movie, but it's definitely very, very inferior version of this movie.
Yeah,
it's like every single deviation they could have made was for the worse of the movie somehow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a misunderstanding of what makes that first movie work, and part of it is because it's such a personal piece for writer-director Pascal Loyer. I hope I pronounced that right. And it just, there's no personal connection in a remake by somebody else. They're also trying not to make the same thing, and they softened it up, which is kind of counter what the point of the film is.
In a large part, yeah. And I'll be honest with you, they very much Americanized it. They took that sort of European, you'll understand what we're getting at mentality, and okay, well, American audiences want things spoon-fed, so yeah. That's what we're going to do. And I felt that they did their American audience a disservice and the movie a disservice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that the writer of the remake, I was reading a couple different places, he, you know, went on record as saying that, you know, depicting violence, not really to his taste. He's kind of more interested in the story of a friend trying to save another friend, yeah, rather than having the one character, you know, kill herself in the middle of the movie, and she survives in the remake. But it's just a lot of things that are kind of more to his taste. It's all like, well, fine, I can't argue that it's not to your taste or, you know, your influences as a writer, but there is kind of something where there's a disconnect somehow between the movie he's writing and the movie that was made while still trying to be the same movie.
Yeah, he undoes a lot of what the original movie does.
Well, ultimately, you know how we talk about, like, the American versions have to have sort of an upbeat ending? Within the context of this movie, it is they did lighten up the ending a lot, which I feel does it a disservice mm-hmm. because the whole point of it is to be so nihilistic.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we can really get into this, we need to talk about the new French extremity or extremism. This was a minor movement in France and French culture with their horror movies. Now, calling it a movement is a bit extreme because the horror movies are about 3% of what is produced mm-hmm. in France, but they're just in the early 2000s, the late 2000s, where there were horror movies that were coming out and some sexual movies as well, where the sex is extreme, the horror is extreme. We're going to focus on the horror here. And the birth of the new French extremity was inspired by torture porn in the States, which with Hostel and Saw. So this was kind of a direct response to that, but wanting to say more with it, where torture porn is about torture, the new French extremity often is more about pain. Mm-hmm. And that might seem like a fine distinction, but once you start watching these, you start to realize what that means as a feeling and an emotion as well.
I was about to agree with you. I think that you hit that right on the head.
And that's something I really wanted to talk about here is this movie, this original film from 2008, anyway, is all about pain, emotional pain and physical pain. Like Pascal Loyer was going through a very dark time in his life when he wrote this film, like depression and suicide. And it's all there on the screen. You can mm-hmm. see it and you can feel it. And you were very affected by this film. I warn you, this is not an easy film to watch.
Oh.
I did this for my original version of 31 Days of Horror back in 2008. I probably had done it a few years at this point, but I think I was still writing on MySpace. I might have actually, I'd have to go see. Some of those articles are on Facebook, so that could be in there. But I had watched this movie and I'm like, holy cow, did this one really get under my skin as somebody who's a very jaded horror fan. And I thought it was a fantastic film and I never wanted to see it again. So mm-hmm. we've been holding off doing this one for quite some time because it was like, I do want to talk about it, but it requires me to watch it again. Mm-hmm. And it's not because it's bad. It's just, this is some hard stuff to sit through.
It is. And I mean, I've watched it more recently than you have because I watched it a couple or 3 years ago for 31 Days of Horror myself. But I did find that on a second watch, I actually was more uncomfortable on the second watch than I was the first one, just saying that. But also I saw more of what he was trying to accomplish with it on a second viewing.
I'd have to agree with you there too. I think I saw more on the second viewing, but I don't think I was affected as nearly as badly, mainly because it was so ingrained in me the first time. I knew it was coming. I knew it was expecting the quiet stuff I kind of forgot about, but
yeah.
Oh, the yeah. torture, yeah. the pain this poor girl goes through in this movie, it sticks with you and it's mm-hmm. never going to let yeah. you go.
No.
One thing
no.
I was actually very surprised about is, I watched this movie, the first one, about 7 years ago or so. And I had completely forgotten legitimately everything before she like gets captured and just starts getting wailed on. Like, I remember all of that stuff and and everything that follows, but the first time I watched it, all of that is pretty brutal and it's pretty affecting, like obviously mm-hmm. enough to like, I don't even remember what was prior to that because of how affecting that was.
Yeah. And I didn't remember how long the prior stuff went on for in my mind. I'm like, I thought the setup was like 20 minutes kind of the way yeah. the remake handled it. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's like a full hour out of the hour and a half before they really start to do their experimentation on her. And it is brutal, and that stuff feels like it goes on for so long in your memory mm-hmm. but when you watch it again it was only 30 minutes. That's mm-hmm. it's a really long 30 minutes.
It is a really long 30 minutes. And I think why you sort of forget that first part is so short is because it does such a great job of establishing characters. Like there's like three stories all in one movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have Lucy's story, which ends. Mm-hmm. It ends mm-hmm. at her death, essentially.
Yeah. We see mm-hmm. her, the start of Lucy's story, the beginning as a child when she escapes her captors who were doing this torture and experimentation on her to begin with. They have stages where she's, and the victims that hit a certain stage might start hallucinating or seeing things. And the interpretation of that between the two movies is very interesting and questionable of whether it's, if there is an actual manifestation there that is come through the cracks, that it makes it feel like the American one is trying to say where it is the trauma that is kind of given form within her mind and causing her to rebel against. And in a lot of ways, I think Lucy, the monster she sees after her initial escape is the girl she left behind.
That's the way I interpreted it as well. And I think that they did it really well in the original because when you first start seeing it, you don't realize that it's a manifestation or a figment of her imagination, whichever it is. And I never really was clear on that. And it doesn't matter, to be honest. But I love the way that it switches it up on you. You see this physical being in that first act just to realize that it's not really there.
Yeah.
And I like, and I think that's a great horror device. And I just, and they kind of gloss over it really quickly in the remake.
Yeah, well, because it's not so much about the person she left behind and her guilt made manifest. It is, it feels like a physical being that, that is harming her in more of a Final Destination kind of way. You can't see it except for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's not manipulating it in a way where it looks like, like it looks like she's being attacked even sight unseen.
Yes.
You know, where you can see in the original film, it's her doing these actions.
Yeah, once it's made clear to you, but it's so well done that you don't sort of see it until they tell you.
Yeah.
They hint at it, and that's the other thing, too, is in the remake, when I talked about spoon feeding, like, I mean, she tells you outright that it's not real. She says, it's not going to let me go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right. She's sort of, it's weird, kind of, in the remake, I interpreted it as it was a manifestation of her, because it looks a lot like her, and it's sort of, there's no other person. I don't remember seeing another person when she kind of escapes, but in the original, it's somebody you see her leave behind, and it sort of goes, it gives you more of an idea of her character. Like, she feels guilty, like survivor's guilt. She's like, I left her there. Like, she's a decent enough human being, but it's sort of like, you were a kid.
And she's so broken.
Yeah, what's so broken?
And that,
it's so terrifying. Like, that's guilt is part of her trauma.
Yeah, the amount of physical and mental trauma she has, and then the guilt on top of it. And this is the beginning of the film, folks. Like, we actually haven't seen the amount of trauma and she's actually gone through yet. But it has affected her in a very visceral way when she's put into that. I wanted to say it was more of a home for children, because, like, in the remake, it looked like a boarding school, a Catholic boarding school. In this one, it was a school, but I felt like it was kind of a hospital as well.
Yeah, because there was all of these documentary shots of, like, a lot of people with Down syndrome and a lot of people with, like, mental and physical handicaps who were all there. And it reminded me of the documentary Cropsey, where at the very beginning they're talking about the mental hospital. And they have all of this footage from that. And which, by the way, I loved that they had all of this documentary style footage in the French movie that and gave you the feeling that regardless of where she was so, like, mentally broken as a person, the only place that they could send her to is where there are people who are mentally handicapped.
Or suffering some sort of situation where their parents can't care for them properly, or because I think that establishes Anne as well. Because I hate to hack on the remake, but I didn't feel
you're gonna really be enjoyed by hacking on that remake.
The Anna in the original, you get the sense that she's connected to Lucy in a very powerful way because they have some sort of shared experience. Well, not sure in that school, I guess.
Shared abuse.
Somewhere along the line, there's something that connects them, and Anna's damaged too, but in a different way.
And they're drawn to each other, and Anna's trying to bring Lucy back to reality, and in doing so, they've developed a relationship together.
That's right.
One that starts as friendship and becomes more.
Yeah, because in the original, Anna's sort of responses to it. At first is shock at what Lucy does, but then it turns immediately into support. Let's help you get through this. Mm-hmm. In the remake, Anna's first response is,
here's a cookie.
Oh my God. Oh, here, no, here's what have you done? We have to get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. When she finds the family.
Yeah. And then she calls 911, and it's a more normal reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's what a human being would do. But I think it didn't serve their relationship because of their connection. I think that it worked better in the original because of her instinct was to support her friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like with the original one, there's this whole thing where, like you hit the nail on the head where you can tell that they have a powerful bond where, you know, they've both come together in this place. And then she, part of her therapy is also getting her friend through it. And you find out that, you know, that they've also, she's like fallen in love with her at some point in over the course of their relationship. And all of this stuff, it like feeds directly into how she's feeling emotionally during the third act of that movie. And it's absolutely all like really important for that.
Exactly.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break here and run the original trailer. I actually did find a dubbed version of the French trailer, so all our English listeners will be able to understand it.
Someone in a room with no light, soon they begin to suffer. Then you feed that suffering. Slowly, methodically, systematically, coldly, for a long time. Martyrs are very rare. A true martyr is a special person. They are exceptional beings. They withstand paralyzing pain, young lady. They can survive total deprivation. They carry all the sins of the world.
Sacrifice. All right, that was the trailer for Martyrs from 2008, written and directed by Pascal Loyer, who directed The Tall Man in 2012, and a more recent Incident in a Ghostland from 2018.
Nice.
I haven't seen either one of those. I actually have The Tall Man. It's sitting in a pile of horror movies that every time 31 Days rolls around, I'm like, this is the year. And then it goes back in the pile because it doesn't look very good. But now that I know he did it, I might change my mind. And I'm going to struggle with these names. Yes, I'm Canadian, but I'm not French Canadian, so bear with me. I'm sure I'm butchering every single one of them. Morgana Abau? Abio. Yeah, she was in Broken from 2016. She plays Anna. Mylene Giapponi was in Made in China, which was in 2019. Catherine Bajin was Mademoiselle. She's a classic French actress. She was in The Uncanny from 1977. Robert... Wow. Yeah, that's actually one I knew. So it was, she's been around a long time and has had a nice, varied career. Robert Taupin was Le Pierre. And I'm sure we didn't mention him, but there seems to be some sort of 7 degrees of Chud going on because, episode 162, when we remade Chud, he was in that.
Weird.
Sam and I are trying to figure out how to turn that into a game, so.
This actually brings up an opportunity to mention that this is not just a French production.
Yeah.
Robert Taupin is a French-Canadian actor, and this is a Canadian French co-production.
Yeah.
So yeah, Studio Canal
is partially responsible for this for this experience.
Yeah, Studio Canal often was a co-production with studios in Quebec.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting about Studio Canal, because I had read that he had a lot of trouble getting this movie made, and he was trying to pitch this to a lot of studios in France, and a lot of places were flat out rejecting him, and he had a lot of trouble casting actresses in this movie. Like, unsurprisingly, but it's interesting that, yeah, it's a Canadian co-production.
Patricia Tallassine was La Mire, and she was in The Walk from 2015. Juliet Gosselin was Mary, and she was in The Gracefield Incident in 2017. Xavier Dolan was Antoine, and he was in Bad Times at El Royale.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and Jean-Marie Moncelet was Etienne, and he was in, Sam might remember this, he was in a CBC show called He Shoots, He Scores.
I remember that one. That one was a big deal because it was one of those rare Canadian productions. I mean, the CBC's never have been shy about nudity on TV.
But that one was
there was frequently nudity on it. So as a young teenage boy, even though I'm not a huge hockey fan, I still watched that show.
Yeah, I think we all did. My buddy Mike was a big hockey fan, is a big hockey fan, and I think he mentioned it to me. I'm like, wait, what? No, because this was like fairly early prime time, like,
yeah,
and oh yeah a lot of sex and nudity on that show,
which I kind of appreciate. It's sort of like, it's that kind of Canadian we're not American type of deal, or it's like, yeah, nudity is fine.
It's a very European approach to making a show. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So that's the cast I have here, but the primary cast, I mean, these are small movies, small budget, single location for the most part. So you've got the hospital school setting and the house, really. There's a few exteriors, but those are your two primary locations throughout this film. And then I guess the basement set as well.
Yeah, the very elaborate basement set. I was really impressed by the look of both of them, to be honest with you.
I actually thought the remake was a little lazy with theirs, but...
Well, and, I mean, the multiple cells and stuff like that, they kind of took it over the top, so suggesting that their experiments were on multiple people at a time, whereas in the original, they were picking a subject, and they were working through that subject at least at a single location at any given time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one thing that I really loved about the original, too, is you really get a sense of, you know, you don't know how long she was there because she doesn't know how long she was there. And in the remake, there really is no sense at all that time has passed in any significant way. It's like...
Oh, no, this all happens like in one night, maybe two.
Yeah. Whereas in the original one, you know, who knows how long she was there, which, again, like, it really adds to how long it feels, but in a very important way.
Well, and you do get at least a certain sense of time through the feedings, per se, as you see the feedings and beatings. But,
and her condition,
and her conditioning deteriorating. So you do see at least some passage of time, but there's the ambiguity of time as well. So it could have been weeks or months even of enduring this to get her to a certain level.
Yeah, and it makes you feel like the way you'd almost imagine her to feel, because you've lost that sense of time as well.
Yeah, everything blurs together and you don't know how long it's been.
Yeah, the viciousness of this movie really starts right out of the gate, and you get uncomfortable because of her escape and like, whoa, what happened? And you start getting those flashbacks along the way. But when Lucy finds these people through this newspaper article, their daughter was a swimming champion, and it just feels like a normal suburban home, a little more well-to-do than normal, but essentially a normal family unit, you know, husband, wife, son, daughter, and the normal dynamics where the daughter's the pride of the joy of the family, the son's a bit of a loser.
It's like your standard American nuclear family.
Yeah, it really was, and even though they're not on screen very long, you do get a sense of this normalcy of family and the bickering and the pride, and it all happens very quickly. And then Lucy comes in and starts blowing everybody away. And you're like, what the hell is going on? And it turns out she recognizes the parents from the photo 15 years later. And this is something, you get the feeling that her and Anna are hunting down these people. And it was a, you're supposed to observe and go to the cops, not blow everybody away.
But you also have this, because you have that passage of time, it makes more sense that Anna kind of doubts it, because, you know, your memories of people's faces fade over time. And I mean, I know she's been through like a lot of horrifying trauma, and it's sort of like, how reliable is her memory in this?
Well, Lucy takes out the parents fairly quickly.
Fairly handily.
She just does it. But when it comes to the kids, she's very emotionally torn. It's like, do you know what they are? Do you know what they've done? And ultimately makes the decision and is, again, traumatized by that decision. She shows regret for that decision. She's not morally bankrupt, but it becomes something she needs to do because she doesn't believe him.
And I almost got that memento feel where it's like, this may have happened before at first. Like she just sort of decides these people are the people who did it to her and she kills them. Just for a moment there, I almost got that sense of it.
Anna has that doubt.
Yeah, exactly. And I liked that feeling I got from that because it gave you some doubt about, well, is she the villain?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I enjoyed that aspect of it. Like those first two acts, there's so many questions. Like you question everything about what's happening for those first two acts,
you know,
because they established that doubts in the first half of the first act.
Absolutely. And a lot of my, you know, talking about it and thinking about it, you know, even since, cause I just rewatched it last night. Even since then I've been revisiting it a lot in my mind. And those first two acts, it's probably one of the better setups to a horror movie that I can think of. It's just such a clean, good, intriguing, like it throws a lot at you. And it's constantly not fitting into the genre you think it's trying to fit into.
I know. I love that, especially when it switches up in the third act and it becomes an entirely different type of horror.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I like the setup where Anna's trying to save the mother each time. Like the mother has somehow survived the shotgun wound. So Anna tries to save her. But then later on, you find out she actually was doing this crap. And you're like, you think back to when Lucy, like in the remake, she stabs her to death, but in the original, she takes a hammer to her head.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, wait, I should have been more satisfied with that when I saw it the first time.
Yeah, well, and Anna has the same doubts as the audience has, right? And what are we seeing here? Like, we've just seen this savagery without provocation. We don't know what the provocation is. So Anna has that doubt, and she just sees everybody dead on the floor and all this carnage and blood everywhere. I felt like the remake had the red crayon was missing out of the pack, but I equated to Sam. Like Sam said, it was Coors Light where I was drinking Molson Triple X on the original, right?
Yeah.
And then I equated.
No, you're drinking whiskey on the original.
Something's hard on the rocks, right? And screw the rocks. That waters it down, right?
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm like, okay, this is the Mona Lisa, and this is the other one's the paint by numbers version, was half of the crayons gone out of the box.
Yeah. Yeah, either analogy works really well.
It's
the paint-by-numbers version, but for a bunch of strange areas, the person was like, yeah, those colors weren't to my taste. And it's like Mona Lisa, but somehow shittier. It's the same, but it's also different in a bad way.
Yeah.
I will say the remake, it is like sort of inferior, but I do say I enjoyed the actress that played Lucy, and I didn't mind the actress who played Anna. But there's also one line that Lucy has in the remake that I really enjoyed where she's like, the monsters are real. And I'm like, yeah, the monsters are real. They're just humans. That's just what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that was,
sounds like you liked it more than I did.
Well, there were a few.
I did like aspects of it.
There were a few aspects, like a few things that they did really well. I think that they did a good job at the beginning, even though they changed it, of establishing Lucy and Anna's relationship.
Uh-huh.
I think they didn't carry it through very well.
Yeah, I don't think so. I didn't even think the acting was very good on their part.
I agree. I think that the Lucy in the original, like her, the damage to her and her madness was very, very apparent. Whereas while the actress who played Lucy in the remake is actually quite a good actress, I don't think they
couldn't
handle it.
Yeah, I don't think they were shown the original film, and I don't think they could. And if they were, the director wasn't able to get them into a place where they could tap into those emotions as an actor. And yeah. It just, none of their performances, I felt, came through properly in the way that they should, because you might be able to soften the violence if the actors are selling it. And if they're not selling it to the level that I think the subject matter deserves, then it just feels like these people aren't going through anything near as traumatic as what the original characters did. Despite one girl getting lit on fire, wasn't one of them, but
yeah, you know, that was so strange.
Yeah, it's too bad it was such shitty CGI.
One thing I was thinking that was kind of odd about the remake is the cult. I mean, the cult is really interesting in the original movie. There's a lot of questions about it. You're basically shown just enough to make your own assumptions, yeah, and those assumptions are interesting. And in the remake, the cult felt simultaneously bigger, but also more ineffective and not as scary. It was very strange. Like, just all, yeah, the kind of having multiple people at once in like laboratories, and they're like quickly doing tests, you know, kidnapping somebody. Okay, let's do this test. Doesn't nearly have the same effects.
You're right.
Despite, we touched on that earlier.
It just feels smaller in some way, despite there being more. It does feel like this is just one cell in a vast network of experimentation, and you don't really need to see other things there. Now, there is a girl in that basement that Lucy tries to save and fails to do so because all the crazy cultists turn up, mainly, and she would have gotten away with it. She would have saved her, and I mean, ultimately, Lucy would have still committed suicide, but Anna probably could have saved this girl and gotten out of there and gotten away with it if she didn't try to call the cops, because the place is monitored. So between trying to make an outgoing call, which was monitored by them, and actively breaking in and taking this girl out of her cell, was enough to alert these people to come. And that's kind of true in both movies.
Yeah, it's handled differently in the original, because Anna never tries to call the police. She calls her mother, then leaves the phone off.
That's right. She left it off the hook. Yeah,
that's right. But
the phone would still be monitored, because this isn't a real house in that sense. It is an experiment. Yeah.
They did say, like the mademoiselle does say, that we've been trying to get through for hours and the line's been busy. So that's how they knew that something was wrong.
That's right.
I really paid attention to it this time because I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything this time. But yeah, I think that, again, back to the remake, is they did that whole middle act a disservice by the way they handled it, with making the girl, just a young girl. I think that it diminished what was happening in the third act, because you didn't sort of see how horrible they really were. You didn't get to see what the effects of effects of what they were doing.
And what they learned, because something they said in the original film was they had experimented on old people, young people, men, women, and through the experimentation, they learned that it was more effective with young women. So they had moved away from the young girls that, I mean, she would have been, I'm guessing, 12, maybe 14, at her oldest when we first see her. Probably 12, because they looked mid-20s, 15 years later, or early 20s. So she would have been fairly young when this was done to her, and they've moved on to this focused group that could be the most effective. And we haven't actually told our audience what they actually are trying to achieve. They're trying to see across the veil. They're trying to find out what comes after life, what is beyond death, without actually having to experience it the hard way, way, by dying themselves, and find the answers to the afterlife, which is what they call martyr. They use these photographs as examples of people seeing it while still being alive. They've endured such torment and torture and trauma that it's been able to enable them to see the other side while still surviving some pretty horrible shit to get there, but they have to survive the trauma to bear witness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're trying to make it happen, and that's what's really horrifying, is they're actually making this happen so just so they can try and get somebody who can tell them what transcendence looks like.
And here's the other part that sort of drives me nuts too, is they're going through this to find out what they can see, and they've kind of gotten no closer. But what's really interesting, I'm like, going, yeah, but you've suffered no pain. What the hell makes you think what they see is what's waiting for you? So the whole experiment seems kind of pointless.
But at the same time, you know, these people who have lots of money, and if you were to be told what lies beyond death, then you'll know everything that's wrong, and you'll be able to, you know, suddenly cut out an entirely large portion of what people believe about life after death. And so regardless of what the answer is, they'll know a lot of information based off of what they're trying to get at.
Well, and these are very single-minded people too, where they think it's just one thing, that's it, that's the next step. Well, what's there for Anna and Lucy might not be the same for this other person here, and that's kind of made more clear at the end.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, there seems like there's almost an allegory there for the horrible things that people will do in the name of faith. Because I'm certain they do very horrible things, and this is their faith, is this finding the answer to what is beyond. But I think you're right, is what's beyond for everybody is or for one person may not be the same for the next person, especially when you've done horrible things to other people.
Right? It's this whole thing of like, it's cowardice. It's like, I need to know what's going to happen and then I can totally save myself. It's like, it's arrogance and cowardice because like, I can totally save myself and I can make sure that my afterlife is fine. I'm like, no, you've gone too far. And honestly, I think there's at a point where there's nothing that can save you. You're old. Like, basically, your only move is to kill yourself now before you do anything worse.
And I think that you hit sort of what was happening at the end of the movie on the head there as well, especially when she delivers that line, keep doubting. You don't want to know almost, right?
Well, the way I interpreted that ending is she was told what lied ahead for them. Like, well, what do you think's going to lie ahead of you when you've tortured numerous people?
Yeah.
And killed numerous people. Where you're going is not the same place I'm going.
No.
But then why would she say to them to keep doubting? Because in theory, if they're to keep doubting, I don't know.
Well, and I think that what she's saying, like, you need to keep your illusions, because what's out there is definitely not what you're hoping it is.
Yep.
It's one thing that I mean, it's so interesting. That's one thing I love about this movie. And it's just that everybody has a different read on the ending and everybody has their theories. And the movie has probably one of the great ambiguous endings of horror movies in general. And everybody talks about it. There's just enough there for you to feel like you can figure out the answer. But when you dive into it, there's always something that can be a contradiction. And I think that's what makes it really great. I mean, personally, I thought it was something like, Everything that everyone thought that they knew about the afterlife was wrong, because it can't be nothing, because they say that she described what it was for over 2 hours.
So, no, she was in that state for 2 hours.
Yeah,
She wasn't talking at the end.
Yeah, she said what it was in a matter of moments when she whispered it into Mademoiselle's ear.
Mm.
So it was a very simple explanation, even though she had been there for some time.
Yeah,
but that's sort of what the theory of transcendence is that it's a state of being where time doesn't pass.
Mm.
I love that she was supposed to recount it to the rest of the people, Mademoiselle, and she's just taking off all of the fakery, the fake eyelashes and the makeup and stuff, and everybody had arrived and are eagerly awaiting what she has to say, and they never get their answer.
No, I love that. Yeah, beyond just keep doubting.
Yeah.
And I will admit that that was one thing in the remake, as much as they changed it, they did try to do something different with that ending, as much as I didn't enjoy it as much. But there's a one moment there where the priest is the one who hears what the description is. And he says, I heard, and then shoots himself. That worked really well for me, even though the rest of the ending sucked.
Yeah, just with that scene, my thought with the priest shooting himself at the end is like, maybe that wasn't even in it. But they kind of had to have something that was similar to the end of the original Martyrs. So they inserted a guy who was like, I heard what she said, and then pulls out a gun and shoots himself. And it felt very tacked on. I mean, at the end of the original movie, it's very, very concise. And the kind of the whole thing leads up to these last, ultimately, 3 seconds of the movie where she says, keep doubting, and then shoots herself. And then that's it. Versus they kind of stretch that moment out over a period of like 5 minutes, and it completely loses its impact, I think, because of that.
All right, well, I think now's a good time to run the trailer for Martyrs 2015. We will be right back to talk more about Martyrs.
So very rare. So extraordinary. They survive the pain, the torture, and they refuse to die.
He told me how perfect I was. That I was the one that they'd all been waiting for.
Martyrs endure the unspeakable sins of the earth and transcend their very being. You are crazy. I sacrifice for knowledge.
No, no, don't do this!
We rejoice in the suffering of thy child. Through her pain, may we truly know the mysteries that are yours.
Was Martyrs from 2015, screenplay by Mark L. Smith, who wrote Vacancy 1 and 2, and Overlord, which, if anybody listened to our 31 Days of Horror from October, actually November, this past year, I watched, wasn't particularly fond of it. But I might be the minority on that one, because, well, I know a lot of people who like it.
It was all right. It had some good moments.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it was forgettable.
Yeah. Now, I mean, Blumhouse is the studio. Everybody's like, hey, yeah, they're the horror. We can do it, guys. And people forget. There's, you know, first Annabelle kind of sucked. the Nun kind of sucked. They do bad ones, too. And this is one of them. The director were the Goetz brothers, Kevin and Michael Goetz. And they did Scenic Route from 2013. And A Violent Separation from 2019. This movie stars Troyan Belisario as Lucy. She was a regular on Pretty Little Liars. Bailey Noble was Anna, and she was a regular on True Blood. Kate Burton was Eleanor. She's got a long resume. People will definitely remember her from Big Trouble in Little China from 1986.
I will admit, I was a little bit stunned when I saw that. I'm like, oh, that's the same actress?
Yeah. Somehow she got worse. But I think everybody just didn't know what to make of this movie, and I don't think they got very good direction on this. I'm not sure who to put the blame on here, but there are some good actors that we know are talented actors that just were given flat performances in this movie. Caitlin Carmichael was Sam, the young girl that they find. She was in 300 Rise of an Empire in 2014. Melissa Tracy played the creature, and I love her resume because it's just like kind of horror schlock, but like, okay, Bloodsucker Punch.
Oh boy.
Fast, Fierce, and Fabulous are just two of the gems on her resume.
Okay, Fast, Fierce, and Fabulous.
Yeah.
I want to see, but it would be a movie where it's Fast and the Furious, but with drag queens.
Oh, that's great.
That's almost what I was imagining with that. So, yeah, please. Yes.
Wong Fu.
Is it just, like, literally drag racing? Oh my god.
Yeah. Drag races.
Romy Rosemont was actually in The Avengers in a minor role. Toby Huss was Fenton. And
Toby Huss, in The Invitation, he is the cult leader.
Okay.
So he's kind of making a resume of these kind of cult characters.
Well, and he's actually been in two episodes we've covered as well. Episode 50.
I did get that one. That was one of Jay's least favorite episodes, Ghostbusters.
That's right. But Trish did get the other one. Bedazzled was episode 122. Elise Cole was young Anna. She was in the Divergent series. Ever Prishkulnik was young Lucy. She was in Lennon. And Blake Robbins played the dad, and he was in Driver X.
We have another Chud connection in this movie, too.
Oh, did I not go far enough? What's the other Chud?
Ivor Brogger was also in Chud.
Okay. What was the role?
I think he was just one of the cult people who actually got a line.
Oh, okay.
Like it was a throwaway, but I wrote it down because he was on the first page of my IMDb list, so.
Oh, okay.
How wild is it that both Martyrs movies have a connection to Chud? Who saw that coming?
Nobody, but we're kind of stunned, Sam and I, about how often Chud comes up as a connective tissue on the show now, so.
Yeah, we're looking into a game. We don't want to just do a straight up 6 degrees, though, because that's being done by other podcasts, and we don't want to necessarily cop their their thing, because that's,
you know what, just on social
watch.
You know what, just in social media, I challenge everybody, like, pick a random actor and then tell me how it connects back to Chud. Don't start with Chud. Just, you know, pick Tom Hanks and figure out how it connects back to Chud.
Nice.
Let's see if you can do it.
Pick an A-list actor.
I don't want a million people doing Tom Hanks, but, you know, pick like Keanu Reeves and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Vin Diesel and keep throwing them at me. I want to see it. So if you see it in the comments already, don't pick that guy. Pick somebody else.
Yes. Or
unless you think you can get to it quicker.
Nice.
Yeah. So, you know, show us some stuff and I don't know. We'll give you a thumbs up. We'll like your post. I don't know. What else were you expecting? Really?
You can maybe we'll do Chud No Price.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a shout out. We can read a few of them on the show.
You can call it the Chud Mutation.
Yeah, nice.
There we go.
The Chud Mutation Invitational.
Yes. How did people mutate from Chud and back?
Yeah. Name of your prog rock band.
Name of your prog rock band.
Awesome.
Nice. That's becoming a running joke.
It is.
Okay, let's get into this remake. I mean, I guess it is a reimagining. I mean, they at least are attempting to do what we ask them to do and not a straight remake, which might have been better served. I mean, oftentimes when they take a foreign film and introduce it to Americans, it's because it's in a foreign language and North Americans are lazy and won't read.
Yeah.
So they'll do an English translation.
And they don't get a distribution in the United States, which is a big part of it as well. You're right, Jay. This does everything we ask them to do with a remake is take the original story and do something different. And I mean, even said at the beginning, is if you watch this by itself without knowing what the original was, it's not terrible. It's just not good either.
And you talked about the heart of it, how it was like there was trying to say something with the original film, and knowing that the person who wrote it was going through like depression and suicidal thoughts. And it sort of makes me, there's that theme in that original movie where I just got the instance, like the whole thing about martyrs is they can endure the pain and suffering of life. And when you're suicidal, you're like, I can't take much more of this, but I don't know what's going to happen if I kill myself. So I'd want to know. So it's this whole thing of like trying to work through your suicidal thoughts. Like, would it be okay to kill myself? I don't know.
Do I really want to know what happens after even? Right.
Yes.
I think that's one of the questions in that original is, do I really want to know? I think that's a question that like I said, and not understanding what it's like to be suicidal, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think that's a question that maybe should be asked when you're in that mindset.
And how do people continue to endure pain and suffering? And it's just such an outrageous idea that, like, how do they manage to do it?
And that's part of what
completely different.
The skill of the martyr is to endure so much torment where most people would just give up.
And the whole thing about dying for your faith and how you are a person who's not doing anything wrong. You're someone who, like, it's like, you know, Death of a Thousand Cuts stuff where martyrs are all, like Fox's Book of Martyrs is just people who, rather than deny, you know, their faith, they just get tortured over a period of a long time.
Part of what made it work for Anna was at some point she just accepted it. and which is when they actually stopped torturing her with the food and the beatings and stuff that were regular, instead of trying to fight back. Once he started accepting her fate, then they were able to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they mentioned in the stages. Book of Martyrs, they mentioned in the Book of Martyrs that there were some, one of them was agnostic. Like, they mm-hmm. didn't have a particular faith, which is no. how they thought they were on the right track, because what they saw wouldn't be affected by a religious upbringing.
Yeah, I don't think faith was really a message in this film. Although there seemed to be a more of a cult mentality with the second one, with the remake, than the first one, where it was, I don't know, so much of a cult as this organized experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And it did feel like more cult-like in the remake.
I do want to mention earlier that with the cult in the original one, it really does have the feeling and the sense of something that you could imagine a whole bunch of rich people kind of have money in this thing where people disappear and get tortured beyond all imagination, doing whatever they do in their lives. They all just kind of support this thing. And that feels like something that could exist in in this world, because we've heard stories about stuff like that happening.
Well, and it's such a hugely flawed experiment, and that's something that we haven't touched base on at all, is there's no way to empirically verify their findings.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, they're trying.
They're treating it as science, but not.
But, well, they are trying, because they keep repeating the experiment, but no two individuals are the same. I mean, if you want a more controlled experiment, you should be doing it with, like, quintuplets or something.
Well, and they keep talking about how they're experiencing hallucinations, and that's how they know stuff's happening. Well, they're already experiencing hallucinations, dumbass. What makes you think that this isn't one of them?
Well, that's a very different thing in the remake, where it clearly is a hallucination, or, well, for the most part, it seems like this is a mental trauma that's been given form with this naked girl that she left behind, and you can really track that psychology in the remake you can't do that. It really does feel like this mystical creature, that this invisible creature that was kind of unleashed through the cracks of her trauma. She got to a certain stage and a crack opened and this thing slipped through. It's a very different thing, and yet they still try to present it the same. Well, I mean, it has a whole lot less meaning if you don't have that guilt lying underneath it.
Uh-huh.
And it's just this haunting thing of, like, hell, you want me to kill these people that have done this to me, and then it just gets, the attacks are even worse. I mean, you can make an argument that that's her guilt of what she's just done, but you can make that argument with the original film. I'm not so sure about this one.
No.
Mm-hmm. No. And the other thing, they really toned down the violence, especially in that first act. I mean, with the daughter in the original, she gets up from underneath the bed and runs, and there's a very graphic scene when she gets shot, whereas in the remake, she shoots her through the bed and you just see the puddle of blood. So that's just an example of where they toned it down. Mm-hmm. And of course, the attacks on Lucy were also less graphic.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, they just electrocuted her. Oh, I mean, you heard her get attacked off camera, but for Anna, it was like she gets electrocuted once maybe, and then that's, next step time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to mention Lucy's death scene. That's where I was going with my discussion of the violence in the beginning, because we were talking about the acts of violence against her. But I mean, her suicide in the original is really quite graphic and quite final, right? Like, there's no question that this is going to end her, and which is what she wants. She's tired of the pain and the suffering. In the remake, with her going over that railing, you know that that's not killing her.
Yeah, she survived so much to do a one story fall off some steps that might kill some people, but you know that's not going to happen to her.
Yeah, and
well, had she landed on her neck,
there's so many times where you think she's gone and like, oh, she's not dead yet. I kept writing it down. She just committed suicide, and then I crossed it out. Nope, not dead yet.
And
so much less impactful keeping her alive too.
I was going to say the same thing, because Lucy's story was done.
Yeah.
At least in terms of the story was originally intended.
Yeah, it starts out as a revenge story, and it's not something she can see the end of. And part of that is the message of the film. It's like her guilt just keeps getting stronger. She's just making the trauma worse for herself by committing trauma on others. Mm-hmm. And she knows this is never going to end for herself. The same character is doing the same thing in this movie, but they keep bringing her back and bring her back, and then they wind up putting her through it all over again.
Which is, yeah, mm-hmm. It's just so, that's pretty disheartening.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, yeah, it's not really traumatic. I'm just disheartened by the
fact. Yeah, they made her, they put her in Anna's place again. Anna wound up going through some stuff, and they realized she doesn't have what it takes. Or does she?
Yeah. And in the remake, I really got the impression that, you know, the only reason they were going after her to begin with was because she maybe had psychic powers or something, which I know we already touched on, but it's just so ridiculous when you compare it to the original one. And there's so much to be said for in the original one where, you know, it's the end of one character's story, but the end of one character's story inevitably is the beginning of another character's mm-hmm. story. And it just, yeah, it's like everything, every choice, including, you know, not showing the violence. There's a lot of choices where it only led to the movie doing the same thing, but with less impact.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
I will say that, again, if I hadn't seen the original, I would have felt much worse for Lucy because she did have to go through all of that after mm-hmm. trying to end it.
Uh-huh.
But again, it's because I know what the original was like and how the original story played out. I didn't find it had the same impact that it
had. Yeah, we don't even know what she's going through half the time because we're just hearing her screams and seeing Anna react to it. We're not mm-hmm. physically seeing it like we did in the film, the original film. And even, except for the one scene when she's getting flayed, it's actually almost as graphic because you're just seeing that back part being pulled up. But then when they come out, she's not skinned. So, like, she wasn't.
Oh, yeah, they only flayed part of her back.
Yeah, like, they just took a little bit off her back where they skinned. The only thing left of her skin in the original film is her face. So, you know, she's going to die. How long she lives in that state is going to be a question because you've just lost a vital organ.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and in the remake, like in the original, it was, I don't know, the crucifixion in the remake is just really on the nose with the religious iconography.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you notice, I kept thinking that when they found Sam in the basement and she had what I call the comfortable cuffs.
Yes.
She had like the cloths underneath so it was comfortable. And the same thing with the crucifixion when she's strapped up to it. It's the cloths under there. So we want you to be tortured, but not be too uncomfortable. Yeah. You know, I kept thinking of that. Meanwhile, in the original film, they find a girl who's literally got this contraption drilled into her fucking skull or stapled to her fucking skull. And they're yanking out with a screwdriver. Mm-hmm. It's just excruciating to watch what happened to this. And you don't even see what happened to this poor girl, but just trying to rescue her was traumatic.
Well, I think that there's a classic like movie rule that martyrs, I feel like in a lot of ways, martyrs is like a study in this rule where the remake doesn't understand it at all. And it's if you have to have a character who has a hammer that they're going to hit somebody with, you show that person hitting a cantaloupe with a real hammer first, and then the rubber hammer in their hand is suddenly, magically, a real hammer because you just showed it smashing a cantaloupe. And in Martyrs, the whole movie is just an exercise in, like, when they're cutting her back, they show the scissors, like, cutting the cloth, and then you hear the scissors doing the same thing to her flesh, and it's very evocative. And similarly, with the victim that they find, you see what they will do to torture somebody, and then you see the aftermath of that. So once that character is caught, you are already doing a bunch of the work for the movie because you know what one of the outcomes is.
Yeah.
You just said what I was going to say much better than I was going to say it.
Oh. Yeah, the remake really fills in just a lot of didn't. Like, there's a lot of stuff where it's a very simple thing, but it really makes a huge difference when one movie like does it and one movie doesn't.
And like, I understand like what they were trying to do at the end of the remake in terms of not showing the physical violence against a young woman, because it's a really uncomfortable thing to watch. And certainly a man beating a woman is something that you're not going to show it to an American audience, not in this day and age, especially considering the climate. But they could have changed that. I mean, they shocked Anna. And I love the use of the horse bit. I thought that was one thing that they added that did work really well because it's so demeaning.
A Snapple bit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, can you, I don't know this, and if somebody, if a listener knows this, let us know, but can you have like a metal bit in your mouth and then get electrocuted and then live?
It depends on the voltage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. But for me, I kind of think that you do have to see it for it to be effective, because part of why that movie is so affecting is you are kind of going through it with her. I mean, not physically per se, mm-hmm. but it's harsh. I was having physical reactions and my body tingling in places where it's just like, ah, I mean, uh-huh. you're just really gripping for it. But when you see Anna getting electrocuted in the remake, well, I mean, it's not as affecting for some reason. I mean, most people can't associate with being electrocuted for one, mm-hmm. but being punched in the face, punched in the yeah. ribs, that's something we've all taken a bruise and a bump, and it's something that really yeah. fucking hurt. Now do multiply that multiple times. Yeah. Yeah. You can relate to yeah. that.
And you've cut your finger, so you know what cutting your skin feels like.
Yeah. yeah.
And the humiliation of it. And I mean, again, they did all these things to dehumanize her by cutting her hair, mm-hmm. Feeding
yeah,
her.
I was going to mention that.
Gruel that looked awful. But, and I think part of what made that work was the again, showing the over time. And I mean, it doesn't have to be a big bruising man that's doing that physical damage to her. It could be. No. It could have been the woman, just because it was mm-hmm. to soften it a little bit if for an American audience or for a North American audience. But I think at the same time, that was part of what made it so horrific was the fact that it was this very large man, and the brutality of it was what made it work, as uncomfortable as it was. And it's something I never, ever want to see again.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I said that and then we had to do this show.
Yeah.
Well, when you talk about it, and it's weird because my take on it is slightly different. Like, I can see with the climate, you could get some people who would be like, oh, that's awesome watching a man beat a woman. But I sort of, it makes that impact where mm-hmm. the victimization or the beating or something of a woman comes with a higher purpose, according to some people. And you can't ignore it. And this would be kind of what they would be addressing as well.
Well, and that's the way I took it. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I feel like they were running around desperately trying to avoid any kind of controversy. And that's kind of how the movie got remade in the first place. It's not because that original movie was successful,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
but people talk about it, people remember it, and people liked it. And hopefully, hopefully down the road, it'll actually make its money back. But it made just a little over a third of its budget.
Okay, I'm going to correct you. I don't think anybody liked this movie. I think a lot of people thought it was a good movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, not like in a sense of like if it affects me and I have an emotional reaction to it and I come out going, wow, that was something. And it's not just an mm-hmm. endurance test. There is a point to it.
Yeah.
That is a good movie. Whether how you enjoyed it is a personal thing. Hopefully it's not. You know, this isn't like watching a Friday the 13th. We are looking forward to the killer going, yay! This is not that. This is not that at all. Yeah. You're really rooting for her, and you really hope she gets out of it, and you know she's not. And that's part of the mood of this. The original film is this nihilism that and depression. Like, it's mm-hmm. it is creating this in you and this futility.
And
but you know how this is going to end, and it's not. There's no good ending here.
I think what Pascal Logier, there's a sort of bit too when you're talking about the violence and the women and how they're just generally sacrificed a lot of times, like thrown virgins in volcanoes. It's been going on for decades, but it's sort of sometimes with some bits of it, I felt he was, because he wrote it in such a state, he in some instances he was too close to the material to kind of get the theme without being heavy-handed with it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is, in a lot of way, a portrait of a man's personal trauma.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's a lot of male martyrs, but I mean, let's be real. A lot of people who usually are martyrs in history that people talk about are women as well.
Mm-hmm. And the burning the woman alive, very evocative of...
Yeah, Joan of Arc or Witch Trials.
Witch Trials, yeah. That was the first thing I thought of.
That was a bit on the nose, too.
Yeah, well, they're trying to go with the familiar iconography a lot of the time in that remake.
Yeah.
Now, they revert all that torture back onto Lucy in that remake, and Anna is thrown away like yesterday's garbage because they don't think she's got what it takes. They beat her up, drug her, and throw her in a ditch with all the bodies that Lucy took, all the people Lucy took out, and bury her alive. Now this is
where should we bury her? We should bury her in the pit with the giant tubes in it.
Yeah, the hole that everybody, those guys just made. But she survives this and is able to dig herself out and amount of rescue. She turns into a badass revenge chick. But
she
I see what they were.
Herself out though.
I did.
There's a tube.
There's a tube. Yeah. But yeah. There's a.
It's
she
for
gets
drainage.
Out. But she gets. She fights her way out, right? And I think we're supposed to say like what they were trying to say is. She does have that strength in her. They just didn't see it. The strength they were looking for that they found in Lucy to survive this trauma. I mean, she didn't go through near the kind of trauma that Lucy did.
Yeah.
But which really made me mad about that ending.
Yeah.
Because there's this look in the eye that this is the look. See that look in the photograph? They've seen it. They've transcended. They've seen the other side. And that's eyes rolling in the back of the head. And Lucy's gone through the similar thing with the flaying, and she's in that state, and we've talked about the man hearing the whisper and blowing his brains out as a result and not being able to share it. And this ending where she gets everybody out, and she's taken a wound too, and they're just lying on this thing that's indicative of the little Ferris wheel or whatever. What do you call those park things? Is it? That spin around?
Carousel?
Carousel, yes. The carousel that was in the park. Yeah. And so the camera's spinning around them. And then next thing you know, Anna's eyes are going up. I'm like, oh, I guess she's dying. But yeah. I got really mad at that ending for some reason. I did not like it. Like, it just was so heavy-handed. Yeah, maybe with the police showing up, somebody might have survived this. But yeah, I feel like they kind of missed the point. But also, the directors didn't have a personal connection to this project.
Exactly.
Like that. And that's very clear. And it was always going to be a really hard undertaking to remake because there's just a personal sadness in that original film that is untranslatable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think, even if they had gotten him to direct the English language remake, I don't think he would have captured the same feeling he did in the original. It was seven years apart, because it was 2008 and then 2015.
Yeah.
Right? So that's a long time. So his feelings towards it are going to be very, very different.
Sure, sure. And I'm sure he sold off the rights because it was like, oh, right, I can move to a bigger house.
Yeah, and I'm not connected to it the way I was when I made it.
Yeah, although maybe he didn't, because I'm wondering what the optioning money was, because the budget of the sequel is actually only $1 million, really low budget. In fact, the original director who was attached to it, who probably would have been a good choice, had already done a low-budget film and didn't want to be pigeonholed in it. But that is like almost $3 million less than the original film. The original film was a budget of €3,390,000, which is very close to American dollars, at least with current conversion. So it was almost a $4 million movie. It only wound up, the original film only wound up making a little over $1 million, which is a loss. It's a failure. But I mean, the remake was $1 million and it only made $400,000.
Yeah, so, I think people love the concept.
Yeah, I think it's because there's so much buzz on the convention circuit with Martyrs, and there wasn't, like, that's how I heard about it, there was buzz about it, and I watched it very early. It would have been 2008, probably, when I watched it, so the year it came out.
That's when it came out.
Yeah, so there was buzz, and but it wasn't something like, well, it's in the mainstream buzz. It didn't hit theaters here. It probably hit some art houses, but mainly through film festivals and good reviews, and the controversy as well. Like, it was definitely a controversial film, even in its own country. It was originally given 18 plus in France, and they really had to fight to bring it down because no movie had been given that rating before. That's basically giving it a XXX, right?
Yeah.
So they really had to fight to give it the 16 plus, which would have been an R rating here.
They did that without compromising the film, right?
Yeah.
They didn't cut any. They didn't make a ton of cuts just to get that rating. They just argued their case, and I think that's fucking wonderful that they were able to do that
to prove what is here is necessary. Because, you know, if you're an audience member who's in there and is walking out because they can't watch what they're seeing, then you're not seeing the final product of that art, the point of that piece. And you might not. You still might not. I mean, if this is already affecting you in such a way where you you can't visibly see what he's trying to do. This is not a movie for everybody. It's never going to be a movie for everybody. It's not even a movie for most horror fans.
No, and I mean, to be fair, here's the thing. I'm pretty sure I got what was supposed to be going on, but again, I understood the purpose of like all the graphic violence, but there were times where like, going, you know, I got to stop this for a sec because it's just...
Yeah, you just want to breathe. Yeah, your first go around, like, it was a little different for Sam. My first go around was like, oh, and even now, like, first thing I did, I'm like, ooh, Transformers is on Netflix. That's how I decompressed. It's like the new Transformers. I like, give me a cartoon.
I was initially going to watch the remake, you know, do a double feature. And I'm really glad that I didn't and had a little breathing room. Not because of the content and being too heavy, but when I was rewatching the original one, I was really, really wrestling with, like, after I watched it and this whole morning before I watched the remake, whether or not it was really necessary to go on for as long as it felt, because there was times where it felt like just purely sadistic just watching it. And I was like, I don't know if it's necessary to depict it so much. But then we watched the remake, which shies away from it. And I kind of have reversed my position where it's like very, very horrible and brutal, and it does feel sadistic, but that all kind of does directly tie into what the movie is trying to say and what the movie is trying to be and the message that it ultimately has. Just because we have something to compare it to, I think it's, I think watching the remake made me realize that Martyrs is a better movie than I thought it was.
Yeah, you can easily lump it into the torture porn category, but as I stated at the start of the program, it's not torture porn as Americans do it. Like, it is not about the torture. It's about pain. It's about physical and mental anguish.
Very much so. Yeah, because even though the violence is very graphic, it's not there for the sake of being graphic.
Yeah.
Mostly. There's some stuff that maybe they could have toned down a little bit without diminishing the film. But overall, the violence is part of telling the story.
Yeah, and the remake diminishes the blood and diminishes the violence, and it diminishes your emotional impact. You feel like you're just watching a movie, and not a very good one. I don't care what order you watched them in, that movie would have never been very good. You watch the French one, and you are impacted. It is affecting you in a way, and that is good filmmaking, regardless of whether you like the film or not. I can see why a lot of people would not like this film for various obvious reasons, but you can't argue that it didn't impact you. And there's a reason why I never wanted to watch this movie again. It's because it never left me.
Well, this is what good horror is, because it's so well told and so well put together. And there's a point to it. So, I mean, I didn't feel good after watching this movie, but I felt something after watching this movie. I felt horrified. That's the definition of horror. I was horrified at the end of this movie. And most horror doesn't get me that way.
I totally most
horror
agree.
Is like, okay, that was fun. And I actively seek out horror that makes me feel this way. And I referenced one when I was talking to Jay, that it wasn't as hard to watch as I remembered, but it was harder than the first time, because I think the first time I was a little desensitized.
Yeah.
But there's a couple movies out there that I found harder to watch. But they're the ones, I don't want to say enjoyed, but they're certainly the ones that I took away the most from, because I felt out of sorts at the end of the movie.
And I think, I mean, this is true for any movie. It's not just a horror movie. If it impacts you on an emotional level, if it challenges you, if it makes you feel something and it sticks with you, like some of my favorite movies, I've never watched again. Because they don't leave me. They've made that much of an impression on me. I go back to the popcorn movies, the just like, eh, that was a fun ride, and the often are easily forgotten. There's a reason why I've watched the Fast and the Furious movies a million times, and Star Wars, and Indiana Jones. It's because they're fun rides to go through. But you watch something like Memento or Martyrs, I don't know if it's a fun ride, but it challenges you. And you feel something with it when you watch these movies. And that's a different kind of filmmaking.
Yeah, it's like maybe kind of similar to this American like anti-comedy movement that's like, you know, Tim and Eric from Tim and Eric Awesome Show, where people are presenting an art form where just because it makes you feel uncomfortable doesn't mean it's not good. They specifically set out to make you feel very specific emotions. And when you respond exactly how the filmmakers want you to respond, then that means it's a success for what they were trying to do, regardless of how you feel about it.
Yeah, uh-huh. This was never going to have mass appeal.
No.
But you can't argue with its impact. And it was 2008 when that original film came out, and people are still talking about it. And I bet you, if I talk to most people, I doubt most of them have seen it more than once or twice.
Yeah. If at all.
Yeah. I can tell you this was, we've done it for this show. It's very likely I'll never watch this movie again. Yeah. Unless I need to show it to somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, well, definitely I'll never watch the remake again.
For a very different reason, because it's just not good.
Yeah.
We've kind of touched on why. It is paint by numbers. It is a light beer. It is.
Yeah.
If you want to challenge yourself to what we have done, watch the remake first and then watch the original. You'll be less angry and you'll still be able to see what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way I did it as well.
And I'm not even sure if it will be less angry, because you'll get to the end of that second one and you'll be revisiting it in your head, and it's, yeah, I can see why they were pissed off. And it's sometimes it's a little tough to put into words, but it is lacking in soul is probably the simplest way I can put it. It is lacking in that personal emotional connection, and I didn't have it. I just felt like I was watching a poor imitation. I mean, there are genuine attempts to try something a little different here, and you know, they were going for a pain and a dour feel, a nihilistic approach in that first one, and they wanted to leave you with hope in the remake. It's not a bad road to take, it just doesn't work.
I mean, it kind of goes against the thesis of the movie.
It does. Yeah. And even though we're left wondering if anybody even survived the experience, I mean, the girls get their revenge and we get a little more hopeful, and it's possible. I'm glad that it failed, because I didn't want to see Martyrs 2, you know, let's attack the next cell of this fucking crazy cult. It could have gotten even worse.
That said, if I was going to do the style of approach that the American remake did do, I feel like why not just go a little bit further and then just effectively make it so it could be a sequel with different-esque characters.
Yeah.
And if you're going to change it that much, just lean into it.
I mean,
it
I can
more.
See why in 2015, like, body horror and torture porn were already behind us. Like, the movie was, it was already too late to do the remake in the first place. We'd already moved on to better things, and we were already seeing a new approach to horror, this golden age that we're going through right now. It was already emerging in 2015. It was still in its infancy, but it was there. And this movie was just too late in that regard. But it's not like we haven't seen these extreme body horror movies in North America. They're rare. But the last time we saw something like that was the Evil Dead remake. And, I mean, some people like it, some people hate it. I really like that film.
It's really good.
And but it also is a very disturbing watch.
Just thinking about this, sort of an analogy with, like, the original versus the remake, when they're trying to get this information out of the Martyrs, it sort of feels to me the original, if you don't endure it, the point is lost, kind of like the Martyrs will never reach that transcendent state, much in the way you will never get how truly horrible this would be, or how truly horrific this little cult just paying money to find out what they want to find out is, unless you endure the worst of it.
Very, very true. Yeah. I just wanted to say, Jay, you were talking about that sort of this new horror resurgence. And the irony is the story itself fits really well into this new horror resurgence with the smarter, more cerebral horror. It's just that it's covered in blood, unfortunately.
Well, I feel like the original does.
Yes.
The remake certainly does not. No. Now, if people want to revisit or discover some other of the new French extremity, I mean, they did not invent this. Body horror has been around a long time, and that's really the source of this. So, the body horror inspired torture porn, which inspired the new French Extremity. I'd actually seen High Tension before this. Alejandro Aja's High Tension is a fantastic film, except for that third act. It does go off the rails right at the end. There's a cut point where if you just cut it there, it's a really fantastic film. And then like about halfway through that third act, you're like, God damn it, you should just stopped. But otherwise, tremendous film, and he's gone on to all sorts of still graphic. We did talk about Piranha, which was Alejandro Aja, a very also graphic body horror film.
Have we done Maniac?
Not yet, no, but that's another great example. Now, for the new French Extremity recommendations, I'd also recommend Them, Inside. I haven't watched Inside, but it's been on my list for a while, so I might hit it this year. And Frontiers. So go check them out. They're kind of the crux of the new French Extremity, kind of all happened around the same few years. So, but all excellent films.
As far as we know.
As far as we know. The ones I've seen are, I mean, I've out of the five I just mentioned, with Martyrs I've seen, obviously. High Tension I've seen. I can't remember if I've seen Frontiers. I'd have to look it up because I honestly don't. Maybe I haven't, but the title's super familiar. Them I've never seen. I didn't even know about it until I read up on New French Extremity. And Inside, I know I haven't seen, but I know the crux of that movie, and it's always interested me. So,
well, it also, when you're talking about like how far back body horror goes, if you want to go like real far back, Titus Andronicus by William Shakespeare has some pretty overt body horror.
Body horror goes right back to the Great Grand Guignol, right? Like,
oh yeah,
like it's always been there as a form of entertainment for a very long time. I mean, gladiatorial combat with blood.
Yeah.
So this desire to see the grotesque seems to be inherent in our human nature, and it probably won't go away, but it's also something that doesn't have a mass appeal anymore, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, and I wanted to say one more thing. This was bugging me, the name for it, when she was going through the metal tubing. What he was putting in was a culvert, which is used for drainage on farms, because I'd seen them before, and I was like, I know the name for it, but for some reason, culvert won't stick in my head.
And it was a very isolated house, so...
You know, that actually leads also, I had one more comment to make about the remake. As soon as she climbs out on the other end of that tube, she can hear the screaming from inside the house, right? Even though she's a little bit far away from the house.
Yeah, that's like, just bad.
No soundproofing?
Yeah, well, and it's like probably several floors down. Like, it is a fairly big structure underneath this house that has been planned and built this way. So it is very unlikely you're going to eat. It's smart to do it isolated, but I'm sure they were also smart enough to do soundproofing. I mean,
right?
That didn't look like a semi-porous basement where I can hear my neighbor doing something downstairs. But if you, there's no neighbor. And they looked full concrete. I'm sure they planned it out a little bit better. Either that or these guys are really stupid. Rich people can be stupid.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I got any more Marty in me, man. This was an exhausting watch. This is probably our most challenging film that we've ever done on an emotional level. Really difficult to even revisit in our brains, because it is a traumatic film to watch, for sure. That graphic torture. And I know I put that warning up, but we probably didn't get as descriptive as we could have. But I don't think there's any description that would have made you imagine what we just saw on film.
Or how you feel in your body when you're watching
it. Yeah, and that's the big one, is how you feel after watching it, because it's not a good feeling.
No.
I don't think.
It's going to stick with you, and it's you got to better be prepared to, it's going to be a tough one to shake off.
I do want to, actually, this might be light, might not be, but I was watching it, and my poor wife came downstairs right at the scene where Anna's pulling the staples out of Sam's head, because her name was Sam in that as well, if I remember correctly. And she goes, she went up and told her friends, some of the friends she was talking to online about what I was watching. But as I'm watching it, she looks at me, she says, "Are you not uncomfortable?" Like, she asked me, "What is wrong? Is there something wrong with you? How can you watch this?" is what she said. And I said, oh, no, I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And don't Jay get me wrong, I am very uncomfortable. Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be watching this if Jay hadn't made me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, she did ask me what was wrong with me. and she only saw those brief moments of it. I'm really glad that she didn't see the rest of it. Because
yeah, you know, no, I know Val wouldn't have not taken to this well at all. I mean, nope. You have to have a strong stomach to watch this movie. And we might be hardened souls, but for all the horror we've watched, but
even we have limits.
Yeah. I would say this is a great movie if you are a seasoned horror watcher and have not seen Martyrs. I would recommend it. I would recommend this movie. And I would not recommend it to most average people, but I would recommend it to horror fans that are seasoned veterans to the genre. And if you just like slashers or whatever, you're probably not ready. But
to put this in skiing terms, this is a double black diamond.
Yeah.
I'd say if you're like a big horror fan, a fan of cinema, or a fan of, you know, special effects makeup, it's a must watch. But a true fan, like somebody who like loves the art form of, you know, it's a really well-crafted movie. You owe it to yourself to watch if you think you can watch it.
Yeah. Previously when Sam had watched this, I had equated this to a piece of art. So I still stand by that it is grotesque art, but it is art nonetheless. Yeah. All right. Well, that is Martyrs. We're going to need some time to shake this one off.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad we're a week away from another recording. But yeah, episode 251 in the can. We are only a couple of weeks away from our fifth anniversary. And if you're just discovering us now, we got a huge back catalog, obviously, with 251 episodes in the can and more coming along the way. So go back, look at our library. We've done lots of horror. We've done lots of action and sci-fi and cowboy shit. We've done it all, man. We've hit every genre, animation. If you're just a fan of cinema, or maybe you don't have a taste for horror, but you have a taste for something else, we've probably got that covered. And you can find where all those episodes are at a central hub on Wix site. Sam, tell them where to find it.
You need to go to invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
And there you'll find links to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and so many more. We're even on freaking YouTube, but Spotify, so many places. And if you're a seasoned listener to Invasion of the Remake, you know you need to spread that word to get more
earballs
on the show. So tell your friends and foe and their pets, everybody you can, and spread the invasion that way.
Hey, Jason, if I wanted to show people that I'm a fan of Invasion of the Remake, where would I go to possibly get some merchandise?
You could go to TeePublic and just search in the search engine Invasion of the Remake, and you'll find our store. And we have got shirts and mugs and hats and PPE masks and so much more that you're going to look really cool rocking some Invasion wear. You can now be that person who was in that thing that one time. One of our favorite catchphrases. Yeah, you too can be that person by wearing the shirt and letting everybody know that, yes, you were that person you saw in that thing that one time. You can be a survivor of 31 Days of Horror if you followed along with us and you did it the challenge as well, watching 31 horror movies over 31 days of October that you have never seen before and make it to the other side and are still sane. Maybe that will make you a martyr. Wear the shirt. Wear the shirt to show your pride in doing that challenge and coming out the other side a little more twisted like us.
Yes.
And we've got some cool PPE masks. We've got the Podcast Forever mask for podcasters and podcast fans alike. It's really cool. It's got a skull design with a big old microphone in front of it. I wanted something like that as a podcaster who's proud at being a podcaster. I wanted something to represent that, and nobody had one, so we made one. And we got three versions of that. We've kind of got an X-ray version, which is really cool, and more of a grunge look, which I think is Sam's favorite. and one that I call the buffed one, which is kind of a slightly comic tone to it. And you can get those in two styles of masks as well. And it's like that with the shirts as well. There's lots of different cuts of shirts, and you can get pillows over there as well, hoodies and wall art, all sorts of stuff. If you like what we were throwing down, you might not want to wear it, but you want to hang it or throw it as a throw pillow. Fantastic. Or drink out of the mug with our logo on it, or our Skelly microphone guy. That one looks like, that looks badass as a mug.
It really does.
Gotta order me one myself. So yeah, check us out, tpublic.com. Just search out Invasion of the Remake. And guess what? You can also interact with us on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com if you want to email us your suggestions, your corrections, your comments, and long form. We do take fan challenges, and we're getting a mighty list happening now, because this year, fifth year, everybody decided, it's time to actually talk to you. And we're getting some really cool recommendations. If they pass the test of, something that we're going to be interested in, we got, 250 some odd examples of things we kind of like doing. So give you guys an idea of the flavor of kind of things we like to hit. If it has the nugget of a good idea, it should be something that is not super well known. Don't ask me to do that movie that came out like a year ago in the theaters that had a big opening, but you didn't quite like it as much as the last guy. Like, we're not going to do those. It needs to have a little bit of history behind it. And you also got to tell us where to find it too. If we can source it, if it's on Netflix or Amazon, tell if it's on YouTube or wherever. If we can source the film and find out where to watch it, that also helps. We're open to foreign films in 70s, 80s, 60s, 50s. We've done it all, man. So throw out the suggestions. Don't be afraid of a no. They're going to happen from time to time. Others will just stick in the queue, and we'll hit them as we can. As the list gets longer, it's going to take longer to get it to a suggestion. But just be patient. It could take a while, but we might make you happy. And, of course, we will give you a shout on the show if we use your idea. And we do have some suggestions for comparisons as well, but most of them are because you really like to hear us remake something. So, yeah, keep firing them at us. If you want us to do a comparison, fire those at us too. We'll add it to the list, and we're happy to interact with you. And even if you have no suggestions, interact with us. We'd be happy to talk to you over on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and in our emails. And we'll respond to you as quickly as we can. Sometimes it takes a while because we do have day jobs. But be patient. We do see them all, even if we don't reply to you right away. So. All right, guys. Well, thanks for the endurance test of this week. We all have now the shared scars, and I don't know if we're going to qualify for martyrdom for watching two versions of Martyrs, but
no.
It surely challenged us and maybe left us with a few scars.
More mental scars. Yay!
I feel watching two versions of Martyrs feels more visceral than watching them get tortured in the remake.
Yes.
Very possible. Well, we'll catch you guys next week. Until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I've been Jeff Omega.
And we are out of here.
Is about why you've been torturing and killing people for years.
It isn't torture when it's for a higher purpose. We're developing their gift, expanding their knowledge.
And these people are here to see this.
They're looking for the answer to the human race's greatest mystery. We all are.
So you murder for their entertainment.
I sacrifice for knowledge.